take it to the top.
Here we go again. It is Take It to the Top. This is the podcast with a very, very simple goal. You just tell me who you would like to get on, who would like to interview, who you'd like to hear about. I will try to take it to the top. I'll go every route I possibly can to get that person on the podcast. This one didn't take me hardly any time at all to get him on because we're really, really good friends. And when I told him the idea for this particular episode, he said, I'm in. I wanted to do something very local in the country music scene in the Capital Region of upstate New York. Capital Region meaning Albany area, all the surrounding counties, and so forth. And when I think of a person who is carrying the torch for local country music in this area, it's got to be my good pal, Mark Pierre. Everybody knows him. He's also a financial advisor. That's his full-time job. But the story is really kind of interesting of how we connected originally. And I don't want to blab too much more because it gives part of it away. This is about a 40-minute interview. You can take from it what you'd like, listen to the whole thing, listen to parts of it, whatever you'd like. I just let it go because I had such a good time with Mark Pierre. And my name is Richie Phillips, and you are listening to
Take It to the Top.
So we are here at Podcast Central with a good friend, a very old friend. I'm not saying you're old. I'm just saying we're old friends.
I was going to say, be careful there.
Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're from the Capital Region, you must have bumped into this man in one way or another, either through his business or his side business. We're going to talk about both businesses. Ladies and gentlemen, Mark Pierre.
Oh, thank you.
Here at the podcast basement.
I'm really excited to be here, Rich. I've been following you forever, so... Yeah.
Isn't this classy, this basement?
This is really nice. I mean, I get TV screens,
sure,
and computer systems and music, everything.
You like the water heater or right next to it?
I mean, yes, I do like that. Does it come on while we're talking?
Yes, you never know. Or the dog's going to bark, or Dory's going to call in and ask me to go to Price Chopper.
That's right.
It's going to be one of those things. Yeah. So maybe we can explain, just without boring everybody, our original connection, because I think it is pretty funny.
Yeah, I mean, we are both Baker Drive geeks from Gansevoort, New York.
That's right.
And when we both had built our houses up there back in, I believe, 1989?
We moved in 88.
Yeah,
good memory.
So, yeah. So yep. And I remember we went up there and right away, Richie, you were walking, I think you were walking a dog by the house. And,
yes.
And I think Lisa came out to pet the dog, and we had a little dog, Mandy.
Mandy, and, yeah, yeah.
And Mandy and Chelsea become fast friends.
That's
and,
right.
And,
oh, good memory.
We used to walk the dogs together.
That's right, exactly.
And, until they got sprayed by skunks. But Richie at the time was he was a big WTRY guy.
That's right.
With Fred Horton, I think, right?
You are exactly right.
Yeah, so
it was an oldie station for those out of the area.
Yeah, and it was very cool, and we ended up kind of becoming friends, and then shortly after that, found out that Richie was going country.
Yeah, I remember the conversation. I walked up to you, and I said, I got this offer to go to a country station, and I don't know if I should do it. And turned out you had listened to them for years even before that station even became big.
It was funny because you had mentioned it, and I said, I hope it's WGNA because
that was the
station that my whole family listened to
back
then.
That's right.
And actually, I think the power was out that night, and you came up to get a match, too, for your candles because you didn't have a match.
That's right.
And we lit your candle at the house, and you walked all the way down, and we watched this glow. And then just as you got to your driveway, which was probably like six houses away,
right,
we saw the glow go out. And then a few minutes later, Richie was back at the end of the driveway going, we just said, why don't you take the matches?
Asking for more fire. And then the one thing, not again to get too personal here or too, you know, too local, but I'll never forget. I think I was on the station maybe a couple of weeks, and we had this huge snowstorm.
Yeah.
It was 4 o'clock in the morning. I take my car out of the driveway. I drive up around the corner of the development. My tire hits the curb,
yep,
and disables the car. I had no way to get to the station. When you're on radio, it doesn't matter. You could have a tsunami. You still got to be there.
That's right.
I called Mark Pierre, and he drove me, and that was a long drive.
Yes.
To the radio station. I never forgot that.
And I was the Good Neighbor Award that day.
That's right.
You brought me in with Fred.
That's right.
You gave me the Good Neighbor Award.
Yeah, that's right. You were on the air with us, too. Oh, man, what a memory. Unbelievable.
That was awesome.
You know, this is interesting. I just played at a senior center, and a senior, a very... very senior person came up to me and said, what do you think makes a country song a country song? And I turned around and said, that is a very interesting question. I'm going to throw that one to you.
That is a great song. And I mean, if someone were to ask me that question, and the thing I've always loved about country music versus almost every other genre is that country music really tells a story.
Right.
And I think the lyrics, most country writers today, and the really big hits that tend up being the ones that stick around for a long time, tend to be really about something that's happened to that songwriter.
Personal.
And personally, I know, you know, in my experience writing my own music, every song I've ever written was kind of about a story. That's something that happened to me, you know. And, you know, over time with my dad, and I wrote a song called Morning Cup of Joe about my son growing up. And I did write a cheating song, so honey, I did not cheat, I swear. That one was just one to fill the void.
That's right.
Because everybody said, all your songs are so happy and go lucky. Do you ever write an angry song? So I wrote that one. So.
Because you think that's part of the formula of country music, right?
Absolutely.
Well, that's the old joke, of course, what happens when you play a country song backwards.
That's right.
You get your house back.
Your dog back.
Your car back. Exactly. Yeah. What influenced you as a... Well, it's funny, because when I originally met you, I had no idea that you even wrote music, no less played an instrument.
Yeah, and I didn't back then.
And you didn't at all. And,
I mean, I really started... I think I was 45 years old.
And jeez.
I bought my first guitar... and it was this used guitar off of a guy I worked with, and started learning how to play a little bit of strumming the guitar. And then I had written this song in my head over time and about my dad. And I used to travel when I was in sales. I used to travel in the car, and I'd be in the car for sometimes 6 hours a day.
Right.
So I just keep singing this riff to myself, and I ended up getting a chorus and adding the verses to it. And next thing you know, I had the whole song, and I'd sing it to myself all the time. And I finally learned some chords for it and got the guts up to record it. And when I did, it ended up being pretty popular.
Maybe this is the time to play a little clip of it?
Sure.
Since we're talking about it. All right, this is a little clip of Mark singing and playing Overtime.
Daddy worked real hard down at the paper mill, running up and down that old machine. You know, I never told him, but I think I will. Remind him just how much it meant to me. Working 16 hours a day, trying not to fall behind, can make a young man lose his mind. But over time, my daddy worked it every chance he could. Over time, providing for us like a father.
I liked this song the first time I heard it, and I still think it's hooky, memorable, it's personal. I love the song. I think it's great.
I'll tell you, I mean, in working in a paper mill, and I worked with my dad in the paper mill for the first 15 years out of high school before I went back and got a degree and moved on from a career standpoint. But I used to laugh. I mean, that one really hit home because my father, I knew what it was like, him raising five of us and having to work 7 days a week trying to make enough money to take care of us. Well, my mom was spent a lot of her life at home, but then worked here and there in part-time jobs too to try and help. But it was tough back in those days, you know, coming out of the 60s and 70s trying to raise a family on one income.
Absolutely.
And you spent a lot of that time in your youth trying to, you know, corner your dad for those precious moments when you could spend some time together. And he was great about it. I mean, I was the luckiest guy alive having a dad like my dad. He still shows up to every show.
I know. They're so loyal to you.
He's like my best bud. So we still hang out all the time.
I like the double meaning of overtime, the way you said that. It's very clever. Very, very clever.
Well, you know, we all struggle as dads. I know you were a dad too, so you get that.
Absolutely. Your stuff is really geared more traditional sounding.
Absolutely. You know, I grew up, I mean, I laughed, a funny story about me is I grew up in the great booming metropolis of Postenkill, New York. and growing up in Postenkill, right next to my mom and dad's house that they moved to when I was 7 years old, and there was this little country bar next door called the Maple Point. And Russ and Rose Hansen owned the Maple Point. And every Sunday they would have these big clam steams, and they would bring all these families together. And it was the epitome of everything you would think about living in a little country community. And in that bar, they had this old jukebox. And the old jukebox had all the old Merle Haggard and Waylon Jennings George Jones songs all on that. So we learned, my buddy was a grandson who was my best friend, Greg Hansen. And we used to go in the bar all the time. And we'd always play the songs off the jukebox. Mm. Well, later on, a few years later, they sold the bar. And the poor bar became a strip joint, which was my mother's worst memory of her growing up out there. But the jukebox and the pool table ended up in my buddy Greg's basement. His parents took it over.
Perfect.
So we used to go down there as, 12, 13-year-old kids, and we'd shoot pool and sing, and we knew all these songs by heart. Funny Face by Donna Fargo. And we still laugh because Greg's this big biker guy with tattoos, and we still laugh. He goes, you remember like Delta Dawn was our favorite song? I said, yeah, isn't that funny? I said, can't tell anybody that anymore, but sorry, Greg, I'm spilling my guts here. But it was really neat growing up. But those songs were always those story songs, the Merle Haggard songs. I mean, they rip your heart out or they make you smile.
But not popular for you being that age. I mean, you probably telling your friends I like Merle Haggard when they're listening to whatever, Led Zeppelin or...
But the real funny thing is now playing out, with the Back 40 band, is we've really brought back a lot of the Merle songs. Mm. And it's amazing to me that even today, when you're playing out at the local establishments, the younger folks, the 20, 30-year-olds, they're coming up and they're saying to me, do you know any Merle? Or do you know George yeah, Strait? George yeah. Strait's huge with the younger crowds. And I'm like, they love the classic traditional country sound. And it's great, the Florida Georgia Line songs. I'm learning one now, one of their new songs, Simple, that we're going to be doing. But there are some great songs out there. But everybody loves the classics. It all comes back to the Garth Brooks. Mm-hmm. He was probably the closest in my generation that came to that classic sound, along with him and George Strait. Mm-hmm. And it's just they had that pure country. Alan Jackson's another one. But you listen to those songs. What was Alan writing about? His family.
His family.
And it was all those songs about like Drive that just brought you right back. You could actually close your eyes and almost picture the whole song.
So do you think that radio today is missing the boat, that they're not playing this stuff because they refuse to play it? And I mean, studies show, I'm not knocking them, studies show that, their studies show at least, that they like the more contemporary hip-hoppy country, poppy country, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, but I also think that where now you're seeing the real strength, and even on the radio, if you look at the satellite radio now that's coming on like crazy, the ongoing joke back in the day when they'd have, especially morning shows, which you did for a long time, and you were awesome at it. But I still remember a buddy of mine saying to me, he said, I love listening to morning radio. Less talk, more music. Less mm-hmm. talk, more music. Less mm-hmm. talk, more music. Less talk, more music. And it was like, okay, shut up and play the music.
That's right.
So we used to always kind of crack up at that. And it was like, so I do think, I mean, they've got some number crunchers somewhere trying to figure it all out.
Yeah.
But I really do believe that most country purists and most, even the generational kids today, are coming back to the pure countryside. And we laugh because we're a bunch of old guys now. I'm 55 years old, and I'm, there's a lot of young country bands in the Capital District now. And we're building a really big audience, and people go, we just love your set list. And I go, really?
So what percentage, again, is the
We're probably pretty mixed, almost about half and half.
Wow.
And we try and keep some newer stuff in,
mm-hmm.
but even the newer stuff we're bringing in, a few upbeat songs. And like our first Florida Georgia Line song that we're going to be doing since we put this together in the last year is this, that Simple. And to me, my wife and I were listening to the song, and the lyrics to the song just grabbed me. And it was mm-hmm. like, this is us. It's all about you and me now, because our kids are grown and we love just spending time together. I think those simple lyrics really work.
Their stuff has evolved. I think Holy is an incredible song, too.
It's great, too.
And more traditional.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, and you miss those, those real sultry songs. They bring people in.
Yeah.
And I think when they try and get to pop or pop country or start reverting to the rap stuff.
Right.
I mean, they're trying to draw the rock audience over and try and do the crossover thing. But I don't think it's not as easy to do like it was when we were kids.
Because
mm-hmm. when we were kids, Alabama was played on both stations.
That's right.
All the time. Ronnie Millsap, Smoky Mountain Rain. Sure. That was a hit on the pop charts and on the country charts.
Hundreds of hits, that guy.
And
Kenny Rogers.
Kenny Rogers was huge. But I think now it's much harder because the pop stuff is real pop. I mean, it's real dance type pop. And I think some of the country stars can do it. I mean, Taylor Swift's making a great career, but she's even given up kind of the country now to be the pop.
Right.
So there's, and of course, you know, when you try and add rap into it, we keep laughing. What happens when you mix country with rap? You get crap. I do believe the pure country stuff and the story songs. I mean, the ones that grab you, the lyrics that grab you, I think those are huge.
But I have to say that making country a little more poppy does have its advantages. Like, for example, I play a lot of weddings. I DJ weddings.
Yeah.
And I can remember, like, 10 years ago, if you played, like, 5 pop songs in a row and then you threw one country one in, nobody knew how to dance to it.
Yeah, no, you're right.
Right? Slow songs, yes, but not a fast song. You cannot play a fast song at a regular wedding that people will goof on you. They'll go, yeehaw! They'll make, like, those kind of, you know...
But what's kind of cool though with the country, the big country push, is that now, you know, as big a song as Celebration's been for weddings for years, so Save a Horse, Ride a Cowboy.
That's right.
So
it's evolved.
You know, those are the songs that get everybody running to the dance floor and Wagon Wheel, and you know, they're just the feel good songs. And,
Shania always works for some reason. Man, I feel like a woman. Even guys will dance to that.
I can still listen to her, and I always laugh. And I, you know, all the political stuff aside, with some of the artists, I mean, I still can go back and listen to the Dixie Chicks stuff.
Oh my god,
and
that's so
they
good.
Were amazing.
And, love them.
And I mean, just it was so sad that we lost that whole piece of their sound because they were. I thought they were just an incredible sound. That was not duplicated. Still hasn't been duplicated.
And when you think of what people are saying about the president and all the politicians today, what they said back then, it was just with bad timing.
Yep.
But what they said wasn't that bad, but I don't want to get into that.
No, it's just it's sad that we keep getting into those things. I mean, I think, you know, again, keep the happy country songs because, you know, there's nothing wrong with crying in your beer once in a while.
Right.
But the reality of it is that, you know, I love this country. I love what country music stands for in this country and how we really do promote togetherness, and I think, you know, this country should always stay united and not ever let anyone or anything pull it apart.
Totally agree. Going back to what you were saying about how you'll play different events and you'll see how, you know, people respond and you've adjusted your set list and that kind of thing, it brings me back to one point that I really wanted to make about local country artists, and that's why I wanted to have you on, is, and I always thought about it being on the radio and commercial radio, I don't think that local country artists are appreciated enough. I never thought so. You guys were the ones, you go out there and you see the actual public.
You're right. And the other side of it is too, is that especially when you bring a national artist in and they get up on stage and they do a wonderful job and everybody loves the concert, but there's no human interaction other than them watching them.
Exactly. And you live here.
And I always laugh. I mean, it is very cool. You know, I got asked to do a 70th birthday party yesterday, and this poor woman, is in a wheelchair and she's diabetic and she has kidney issues. She's going through dialysis.
Oof.
And she said to me, she goes, I may never see 80, but she goes, my 70th birthday, what will make it is having you singing at my 70th birthday.
Isn't that cool?
I'm that weekend in September, I happen to be playing Friday night, Saturday night, Sunday morning for a charity event, and then from 11 to 1. And she said, my party, I need you from 2 to 4. And I go, I'll be there.
Wow.
And she goes, you will? And I go, absolutely. I said, I'm going to be there right around 2, though. So, but to me, it's like, if I can make that much of a difference in somebody's life.
And
I
you
mean,
do.
It's incredible to me. And just by doing something simple.
Right.
And some of these local folks, they really do see us as like the celebrity, which cracks me up. Because, you know, I'm a legend in my own mind.
No. You're a legend more than your own mind. But you're also the person who delivers the music. In other words, when you hear a song on the radio. I just lost my train of thought. Continue train of thought. You hear a song on the radio, you hear it maybe 10 times and it's gone. But I think you guys playing the songs in your own version at a party or whatever, just you guys are the sales people.
Yeah.
You continue the sales for radio, you know, because people will come up to you and say, I love that song. Who is it?
Yeah.
Bam, bam, bam. They go out and buy it.
They do. And they download them again.
Because
I don't know about you, but I listen when I'm listening to the radio and all of a sudden I hear a song I haven't heard in a long time.
Right.
It's like, oh my God, I love that.
That's
song.
Right.
And then you end up downloading it. So, you know, it may be the 99-cent download now, but that's okay.
Right. Exactly. When you write, Are you a disciplined writer? Do you try to write like all the time, or
no,
I know you're busy with your business.
Yeah,
too.
It's funny. You know, I always get a thought in my head, and I laughed at like even that little cheating song. I wrote this song called "Somebody Said," and it's funny. An idea will hit my head and it'll stick with me. And sometimes it'll stick with me for like a week or two.
Mm-hmm.
So I have this little app on my phone that I can actually record some things and I'll just sing what's coming to my head.
Yeah.
So I save it.
Mm-hmm.
And then a lot of times if it comes back to me two or three times, it's like, okay, if it's really kind of stuck in my head,
right,
it would be stuck in somebody
else. If it's keeping you up at night.
And, yeah. And so I'll usually kind of store it and then I'll kind of, things will come to me along the way. Like Overtime was probably a work in motion, about 6 months putting all the pieces together. Because I think if you try and push writing too fast, then you're putting words in there instead of the thought or the story.
It's forced.
Yeah. And I think if you take your time and you really let it come together and let the song kind of take you in a direction where your mind is going,
mm-hmm,
I think it just works better. And some of the stories, like, you know, Morning Cup of Joe was one of the other ones that, you know, growing up with a son named Joe.
Right.
And I happened to wake up that morning and Joe had actually said to me, someday you got to write a song about me.
Because
I wrote a My Little Girl song for my daughters and,
right,
and had a song for my wife that I had written. So Joe, when I wrote Morning Cup of Joe, I had woke up and I was flipping channels and MSNBC was on in the morning and Joe Kieran in there, the Morning Joe.
Oh, right.
And I mean, I'm going back 10 years ago or 8 years ago. And all of a sudden, I was like, Morning Joe, that's kind of a cool concept. And I like the way they did that.
Sure.
And I said, you know, every morning I wake up and my son comes down those stairs and, you know, like the lyrics in the song, his hair's sticking up everywhere. You know, he comes in and he hugs me. That's my Morning Cup of Joe right there. And it's just a, you know, that whole picture in my mind, I can see him coming down and with his goofy smile, and but he used to always come over, give you a hug, high five you, and that was the way you started your day.
Well, let's play a little bit of the song then, although you already gave away the plot.
Sorry.
It's Morning Cup of Joe.
It was about the time that Joe turned three, a cup of coffee there in front of me, when I heard this thump and down the stairs he came. As he scratched his butt and rubbed his eyes, the thing I couldn't realize is that we'd start each morning in our special way. 'Cause when I hear that thumping down the stairs with his hair sticking up in the air, he comes right in and he hugs me. The truth is that I just can't see how my day would go. I didn't have my morning cup of joe.
Sticks in my head.
Yeah. It was just, you know, and I still, you know, I have a couple of people who come out to see us when we would do that song live. And one woman in particular, and she asked me to play it every time she comes out, and she cries every time I play the song. So it just obviously really hits home with her,
yeah,
raising that son and seeing that goofball coming down the stairs. So
he may not be named Joe, but he could be Morning Cup of Charlie.
That's right.
You know, I've gotten a chance now doing this podcast to talk to recording artists. One guy, a very successful, huge recording artist, Phil Vassar. It's just interesting to see their differences in the way that they write. Like Phil Vassar is kind of like you. He has stuff all over his phone. Like he'll be driving and, yeah, you know, just turn the phone on and just has little snippets of stuff all over the place. There's another guy. He's a new artist. His name is Dustin Collins out of Nashville. I guess he had the number one downloaded song on iTunes. And he was saying that he writes a song every single day.
Isn't that amazing?
He gets up. He makes sure that he tries to write something every day, which I think has got to be tough. And his philosophy is you got to write 100 songs to get a good one, which, yeah, has been a theory of some people. And then there's another guy, like, didn't interview him, but I just read an article about James Taylor. The way he writes, he'll go into a studio and lay down a piece of music. He'll just have the music in his head. I don't think he has any idea of what the topic's going to be. And the music will just sit on his machine or a computer or whatever for sometimes a year.
Yeah.
I think his last album... And you went to the James Taylor concert.
Yeah, I just hit in Tanglewood last week.
Yeah, and that new album, supposedly, he had the music laying there for a long time. He went to his cabin in Montana, literally in Montana. I think he said, I got to get away from my family. He locked himself in, and he wrote the words. There's just so many different ways of writing.
And it is. And I mean, and everybody, yeah. I think, has their own style. I mean, and I remember years ago, I was going down to Nashville to market some of my songs.
Yeah.
And actually, you had given me the name of Billy Montana. And,
correct.
And he ended up, what a gracious guy. I mean, he called me right back when I left him a message. And, mm-hmm. He was laughing, and he said his advice to me, and he goes, look, I've written a lot of songs, and he had, I think, what, 5 or 6 number one hits now.
Yeah.
And he actually said to me, he goes, look, he goes, write songs about things that mean something to you. Because mm-hmm. if they mean something to you, they'll mean something to someone
else. You'll have a passion about
it. And he was right. I think the guys who are trying to write 100 songs, they might get hit one.
Right.
And if they're really good lyricists, they're probably going to get some stuff done. But I really do think if you look at the majority of the major hits, the ones that stand the test of time, somebody wrote that song about something special.
Correct.
And about something specific. And so I like those songs that really come from the heart, because I think the lyrics flow a lot better.
Well, the only difference is this guy was under a contract, probably. A lot of people are under contract.
Exactly.
They've got to come up with something. So with the pressure, sometimes the pressure is good. It'll make you write something great. But otherwise, you could be writing some garbage, too. Now, for those folks who don't know Billy Montana, he was in a local band here called Billy Montana and the Long Shots. That was years ago. Then he went to Nashville, became a songwriter. And I think, in fact, I know, he got a song on Garth Brooks's album.
Yes.
Well, his comeback album.
The first one, and I'm trying to remember
the song.
The name of the song, because I remember the video. The video had the rain pouring all over him while he's eating a sandwich because somebody broke up with him.
Yeah.
But that song went number one. I think it was the first release off that later album.
That's right. It was Garth's comeback song.
But he wrote Bring on the Rain, too, for Jody Messina, which still to this day is one of those ones I get goosebumps every time I hear that song.
Yeah.
And he's written and Suds in the Bucket for Sarah. Everything.
That's right. Suds in the Bucket. And his son is in country music.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Randy, right?
Randy Montana. Yep. Yeah. Then we also talked about another local artist here, Eddie Kilgallen.
Yes. Yeah. And Eddie went on to put together Ricochet. And they had, I think, a huge...
Yeah.
Run with Daddy's Mama and Daddy's Mama's Good Looks. And he actually wrote that song.
Daddy's Money.
Yeah.
Yep.
And he wrote that song. And then obviously he's been with Montgomery Gentry in their tragic year they've had. But just actually performed locally up in Clifton Park and did a great job. The concert was still really good. It's just really sad. I mean, when you lose somebody.
That's true.
Like that. And it is sad when we lose the good ones. So.
And a lot of great, going back to the music, a lot of great local talent. I remember when Eddie Kilgallen called our radio station, it was when Dale Earnhardt died.
Yeah.
Or maybe shortly after that. And he said, I've written a song. I'll just play it for you guys. And he played it for us over the phone. And we're like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
It was such an incredible song. I don't know whatever happened to that.
And
used in a video somewhere. But
he's written, I mean.
He's talented.
I was cracking up because I don't know if you I used to watch Duck Dynasty. One of my faults in life.
Don't make you a bad person.
But
really.
But it was funny. They released a Christmas album.
Oh yeah.
And there was this song on their Christmas album that became one of my favorites of the Christmas album, which was Camouflage and Christmas. But it was about a guy serving overseas at Christmas time.
Oh, okay.
And it was a very sultry, really, you know, but great song.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is, I found out later, Eddie Kilgallen wrote the song.
Oh, no kidding.
And I'm like, unreal. I said, you know, so the talent does rise.
Yeah.
It really does.
And it comes from this area.
Yeah. I just shouldn't have waited until I was 45.
That's right. Going back to when you went to Nashville with these songs in your pocket and you started knocking on doors, give us a little bit about that. How did that work out?
That was really cool because...
Billy Montana helped you.
He kind of gave us some guidance, and Ace Parkhurst, who helps mm-hmm. co-write a lot of the songs with me, lives down in Albany, and he's got a little recording studio and helped me out a lot. And Ace knew a guy down there, and the guy had this recording studio, and he was a mastering engineer down there. And when we went to his house, he did all of his mastering in his house. And we walk into the studio. His wife goes, oh, come on in. So I think his name was Joe Palmasio. And we walk into Joe's recording studio, and he had these mastering speakers that were marble, and they weighed 800 pounds apiece. Because he said, well, you can't have distortion. I'm like, distortion? You know, you got a hernia from moving them. But
you can't steal them.
Right. So, but he brought us in, and all of a sudden the phone rings, and his wife comes in and goes, honey, that's Jewel on the line. And he goes, oh, I got to take this when I'm working on a project for us.
Oh, Jewel.
So he starts talking to Jewel. And so Ace and I are walking around the room, and he's got like four Grammys sitting on his shelf.
Wow.
And we're like, wow, this guy's like the real deal. So then the guy gets in his little chair that looked like a, you know, the throne. He was the king of his little castle.
Yeah.
And he played my CD on these beautiful speakers.
Whoa.
And I'm thinking very humbly for a few minutes that, wow, this is pretty cool. I mean, this guy got a Grammy for mastering Ray Charles' greatest hits.
Oh, my God.
And I'm thinking, Ray Charles' songs went through these same speakers and system, and here is mine on this guy's thing. And the guy even said to Ace, he said, you did a really great job mixing this stuff, and he liked the songs. And, I mean, nothing really has come out of it yet, but for me as a songwriter, if I'm 75 years old someday and my grandchildren pop out a CD and pop it in and say, oh, my God, Pops wrote this.
Right.
That would be the biggest compliment in the world.
No, that's good.
Those things will last forever as long as they're recorded somewhere. And
that's
thank
true.
God I had the things recorded that I've written. So
right. You're not trying to make a career out of it right now as far as it
would
to
be great.
To become a celebrity.
Right.
Right.
And I always said, I'm too old to get in a tour bus and travel around the world. And the day job has treated me very well. So I'd love to someday continue to write, and it would be a dream to get something published someday. Mm-hmm. But even if it just stays just my stuff and more personal, I'm fine with that because I'm happy with the way some of the stuff has come out.
Oh, it's great stuff. In fact, reading an article about Billy Joel. Billy Joel never really wanted to be a celebrity or a performing artist. He wanted to be a songwriter.
Yeah.
It just so happened that I guess maybe at one point he felt he sang the songs better than anybody else.
And back to that conversation with Billy Montana.
Yeah.
One of the things he had actually said to me on the phone that day, he goes, you want to be the songwriter? And I go, really? He goes, Mark, he goes, I still get paid very well for when these songs become popular. And once you're a songwriter that has something published, then people look for more from you. And he said, but I can go to the grocery store and nobody raids me in the aisle. He goes, I can go out with my family on a camping trip and nobody's going to bother me. He goes, there's a price to pay for that celebrity. So
sure.
And I'd love to find out what that price is. But no, I mean, honestly, you know, I'm a realist and I love performing and I love the reaction I get off of the local folks and it would be cool to sing someday down in Nashville
and maybe I'll
bribe some guy to let me do a set someday down there but it is fun.
But you're singing now with the Back 40 Band, which is a local band who's been around as long as I was in radio.
Yeah.
And it's great that you're the lead singer there.
Yeah, and Frank Valenti approached me last year. I was doing a little project called MP3 with Ace and Dave McCarthy and Leo Cacciadorian. And
you guys were great.
And we had a lot of fun. And it was more of an acoustic, laid-back type of situation. And then at the end of the year, I kind of decided I was going to take a little break. And then Frank had called me up because this year was the Back 40 Band's 20th anniversary, which is amazing for a local band to be around 20
They've
years.
They've been around. I can tell you they were around 20 years.
And I can't even tell you how many national acts they've opened for. So it was really cool. And Frank called me up and he goes, look, I want to go back out with the Back 40 Band this year. They had taken a year off. And he goes, but I really need a good front man. And he goes, I love the energy you bring to it. And so we talked and we went to a couple practices and just to see if it was a good feel together. And Kenny Stronach, who's the drummer, Kenny's amazing.
I know Kenny.
And Eddie Legenbauer. And if you remember, Kenny played with me with Lost Cantina.
That's right.
So I had some experience with Kenny. It was all positive.
Mm-hmm.
And then Eddie Legenbauer is the guitar player. Eddie's been with Frank since day one. And actually, Kenny was there originally with them too. So, and then we brought in Doug Doyle on acoustic and mandolin, who just adds a lot to it, and he helps out with some harmonies. And Frank's an amazing harmony singer and bass player, but he's also, I mean, he knows how to put things together. And when we get to a practice, putting the arrangements together on these songs, it still amazes me. You know, I've always. Most people don't know who Rich Little is anymore, but I used to always say I had a little bit of a knack of like a Rich Little. So when I'm singing an artist's cover tune, I kind of can almost sound a little bit like them.
Yeah, I can hear that. When you sing like a George Strait song, you sound, you have no choice in a way. If you're learning the song, sometimes you pick up the mannerisms.
Right. Somebody always said, what does Marc Pierre sound like? I said, I really don't know. Whatever you want him to sound like.
You are a walking cover band.
So I always laughed. It was kind of fun. But Back 40 band has been a blast, and we and the response we've had has just been incredible. And then, of course, because I've got a little bit of a reputation in town, and so does the Back 40 band,
right?
We've had really no issues getting booked. So we've been getting a lot of, and we're playing a lot earlier.
Mm-hmm.
I've been pretty adamant with some of the places that want to book us that, look, country music crowds don't show up at 11 o'clock at night.
Right.
You know, they're there at 7. You put us on 7 to 10:30, I'm going to pack your place and we're going to have a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been working out really well. And I think people are starting to get that about country. You know, we have an audience, but our audience isn't going to be the... It isn't always going to be the crazy late at night 10 to 2 type of crowd. It's more that younger crowd, and we've been having a ball with it.
I think a lot of clubs aren't doing the 10 to 2 anymore, right?
I always said to people, what good happens after midnight?
Right,
unless you're home.
So where are some of the places that you're playing?
Like this weekend, we're playing in Powers Park in Troy, and I love the park circuit, and we're going to be playing Freedom Park in Scotia.
Oh yeah, right here. Up.
And on July 21st, we've become a staple down in Watervliet on the Rusty Anchor, the barge down there.
Yeah.
And we do a lot of Thursday nights down there, and we play like 6 to 9, and people come in and have dinner. But we've been packing the place every time we play. And I honestly think I must be doing something right with the man upstairs, because I think in 2 years, and I'm going to say this, and it's going to rain the rest of the year, but in 2 years, I don't think we've ever had a rain date.
Amazing.
We've been really blessed, and the weather's been great, and of course, this summer we've had great weather up here, so the outdoor things have been great. I know this weekend we're praying for sunshine on Saturday. We're not supposed to get it, but I like the parks, and I love getting kids out. I mean, and playing in front of kids. And I think that's one of the things that the sad part when you're playing the bars in those places,
they can't see it.
They can't see it,
right?
And the kids love the music, and I think, you know, that's the one part, the local music scene. I'd rather try and inspire a few people instead of waiting till they're 45.
That's right.
Start this young. You know, pick up a guitar, pick up a keyboard. Because now, with the internet on YouTube and these places, you can learn anything in a very, you know, just taking the time. And you're an amazing piano player.
Oh, thank you.
And, you know, probably the best I've ever seen.
Oh, thank you.
If you start young,
yeah, I know,
it's so much easier.
The tools.
My 55-year-old head has a really hard time wrapping itself around a B minor.
Well, Phil Vassar, who I talked to, I didn't realize he didn't even know the piano until he came to Nashville. Yeah. He came with all these songs, and he said, I always had to, you know, count on somebody else playing the piano. He said, I started taking some lessons. I'm like, you didn't learn that until you were way into adulthood. I mean, he can play. Oh my God, it's just amazing.
Well, and I think, you know, and that's the other thing, is that I think music is a craft, and I think just like vocal singing is a craft, and you know, just like a guitar or a piano, I think your voice is an instrument, and I think if you use it the right way. But the other side of it is that, you know, I've always, and I think what people appreciate too with what we're doing, especially now with the Back 40 band, I've always been anal about learning the songs. And I used to tell, because I think you put much more heart in the music when you know the song and you learn the story, and you kind of, even if you do a little research on the background and why the guy wrote the song, because I see too many, you know, I'd say the only downside to some local bands and some of the cover bands I see is that they use these iPads now.
I was just thinking that. Yeah. I'm amazed. I've watched you sing 3-4 hours. You don't ever look at anything.
And I mess up the words all the time, just people don't know.
No.
Because you just keep singing.
Yeah, but very minor mistakes. It's amazing you remember all those. I use an iPad.
But I always say, when you're playing out, you know, it's hard to get the feel if you don't know the words.
Right.
And it's you know, I know it's an easy way out when you're learning, you know, sometimes we're playing a 4-hour gig, you gotta know 48 songs.
Right.
That's
but it could
lot.
Be a crutch too.
Yeah.
If you don't get away from
and
it.
Exactly. And and I think if you really take the time and learn the words one thing I always notice that's incredible about the brain. If we're doing a song in a set list and once it's in the set list, I'll never forget the words to it.
Yeah,
if I take it out of the set list, 2 weeks later, I got to think about the words.
That's interesting.
It's like your brain just shuts off that register and dumps it. And I've always thought it was really weird. I have to almost relearn it if we take it out.
But interesting.
If it's in our set list and it's in that repertoire, what the songs we're doing, I never forget the words to it. And it's kind of neat.
But also, you are
lyricist, you really concentrate on lyrics. So if a song came on right now that you and I had never heard before, what do you listen to first? Because for me, I'm listening to the music more than the lyrics.
Yeah.
So I think that's why, possibly, I have to concentrate on the lyrics and read them, because I'm thinking of the next chord I'm playing versus the lyric.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, sometimes it takes the music to pull you in a little bit.
Right.
The first time you hear a song, or the tempo or the beat or something that's going to pull you in.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, this I always like a song with a story.
Right. So, but you're listening to the story in your head, so I think you naturally are going to remember it a little better.
And I don't know about you, right, but I do everything very visually. Mm-hmm. So when I'm listening to a song, if the song's grabbing me, I'm thinking of what that song is telling me in my own head.
So it sinks into.
So if it's a song about a love story, I'm thinking, you know, about my wife or about my life, you know, growing up. Or if it's a song that talks about family, I'm thinking about my kids or my parents or my brothers and sisters.
So you're going to remember it better. Yep.
So yeah, it does. And if you get that visual and you know the story of the song, makes it 10 times easier to learn the lyric. Because there is a flow. Good songwriters always have such a good flow to the song.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And even like when you look at Overtime, it's about my, you know, starts off with my dad working in the mill, and then me working in the mill, and then tucking my daughter in at night and realizing that I don't want to be working crazy hours anymore. Mm-hmm. And it was actually the truth. And that's when I left the paper industry and went off and went into sales, and my quality of life jumped, and then I was spending, you know, I was embarrassing my kids on every field trip.
Well, yeah, explain to everybody what your day job is.
Yeah, so
I know you say sales, but that could be anything.
Yeah, I know. I did go into sales for a few years after leaving the mill, industrial sales, and then about almost 20 years ago went into the financial services industry, and I've been a vice president at Morgan Stanley now, and love the firm and love my job and love my clients, and I've been very fortunate.
You do great. You've done great in both arenas.
Yeah, it's amazing, and it's kind of fun when you put on a suit all week long, and then on Saturday afternoon you show up with your cowboy boots and cowboy hat
right
on. And I've actually had instances. The funniest one was a place in Malta we were playing, and I had a couple that were clients came in and sat down at a table, and they're having a drink, and they're coming to listen to the local country band, and they'd been clients of mine for like 10 years, so they knew exactly who I was. But I had my black cowboy hat, my boots, and I was dressed up like the cowboy, and I get up there and we sang the first set, and I'm watching their reaction, and they were enjoying it, and I'm thinking, this is the little pressure, you know, and I'm thinking they must have known me. So I walked over and I walk up to the table. I said, so I didn't know you guys were country music fans. And they looked at me and they go, Mark?
They didn't know?
They had no clue it was me. And it was like, this is hysterical.
That's great.
But they were enjoying the music. So I said, that's the best compliment ever. And they go, you're great. I was like, thanks. So that was kind of fun.
So you never mentioned to them, obviously, that you were even in a band, and they didn't know.
No, because I mean, it's like anything else. When you're in my business, you just don't know how they're going to take it. Are they going to think I'm a goofball because I'm out there singing country music? Or are they going to think it's kind of cool? And the funny thing is most people think it's, you know, everybody has a hobby. I always tell people, this is my golf or bowling league, and it's one night a week. I go do my practicing with the band, and then we play out. And you know what? It doesn't stink that, you know, you get a little extra cash here and there when you're going on a vacation or something. And
you know where to invest the money on Monday because of your day job.
That's right.
That's really good.
And if I'm paying somebody to help record, you know, it covers the cost of the expense of trying to get some of my new songs recorded. So it's worked out really well.
It's great. Mark, Pierre, it has been fantastic for you stopping in here. Did we cover everything? Is there anything else you wanted to promote? Are you opening up? Well, you already told me off mic that you're opening up for some national acts.
Yes. Yeah. So we're actually going to be the Back 40 band in at the end of August. We're going to be at the Scaticoke Fair. We're opening up for Brandon Lay, who is a young up-and-comer. They've been playing a lot on some of the satellite radio stations.
Country?
Yes, country. Big-time country guy. And he's actually touring with Kenny Chesney right now.
Ooh.
So, I mean, I could think of a lot worse people to tour with. So, you know.
Got a phone number? I want to get him on the podcast.
I know. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But I'll definitely get it when I play with him.
Please.
Because hopefully we'll get the opportunity to meet him. But
that's exciting.
Yeah, and I'm hoping that we get that opportunity going down the road, because I've opened for had some shows with, you know, opened at Country Fest one year.
Mm-hmm.
Back when you were in the radio
station.
And you know, got to open the year Eric Church was there, and, mm-hmm. and I think it was Dustin Lynch in Thompson Square. So
Thompson Square.
That was very cool. Done a couple shows with. We did a show with Ray Lynn a little over a year ago, and then did a couple shows with Sawyer Frederick from The Voice.
Yeah.
So I've had some really nice things. Craig Campbell, great guy. I mean, and we did a show up at Vapor in Saratoga, and I'll tell you, the guy walked out and he says, "Do you mind if we eat lunch or eat dinner with you guys?" And I'm like, "Sure." And it's like, I didn't know what to say to him. It was like, "Wait a minute, the celebrity's asking to have dinner with us." I said, "I think that's screwed up, isn't it?" I said, "Only if you show us your bus." Well, and I'll tell you, when you open for some of those acoustic shows, especially, what you find out is that these guys are famous for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when they sing, Craig Campbell's voice is like pure butter. I mean, the guy is just so smooth and so sultry and can sing everything. I think he even did a couple Cheap Trick songs. Mm-hmm. But guys like him and Mo Pitney, when they show up.
Mo Pitney's great.
You just know why they're so good, because you sit there and everything is, they never miss a key. The voice is smooth as silk, and they're singing five nights a week.
Yes.
I mean, I know what it's like doing one night. When you're doing 3.5 hours, I can't imagine doing 2 hour shows 4 times a week or 5 times a week. Obviously, that's an amazing feat.
And I remember from the morning radio years, we'd have these stars come in, and you could always tell, now that's a pro, because it's 7 o'clock in the morning and that person's not out of tune.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, they could sing any time of the day or night.
Well, those are always. I always still like the radio shows when they'd ask me to sing a song in the morning, because then I could do the Johnny Cash stuff, because your voice is always a little deeper in the morning.
Right. Even if you got a girl coming, she could do Johnny Cash at 7 in the morning.
Because if they ask you to do that at 3:30 in the afternoon when you've been talking all day, then you just can't hit those notes anymore, because your voice is actually, it's like a muscle. It gets tired, too. So
I remember we had Carrie Underwood came. She was singing at the Times Union Center, and she came in at 1:30 in the afternoon. I had done the morning show. But Kevin Richards, who was doing the midday show at the time, he said, "You know, I'm going to be interviewing Carrie Underwood. You want to come back and just watch it?" I said, "Absolutely." So I came back. It was, like I said, about 1:30, quarter of two. She walks in. She sits down at the microphone, and she looks at us, and she said, "Boy, you guys get up early." I looked at Kevin. I'm thinking to myself, she got out of that bus, probably didn't know what time of day and night it was.
Nope.
That's what you have no idea what those people go through.
No. Well, and then how many people have you had your picture taken with? I mean, you have met unbelievable number of...
You want to see it on my computer?
Country music stars. It's incredible. That's why I always say to people, I don't need to know all of them. I just know you. Because you've had your picture with them all. So I am getting my picture taken with them through osmosis.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Well, we went to the Country Music Hall of Fame, because I now have relatives that live right outside of Nashville. So we went to visit them. This was only about a year ago. And I didn't want to be that... name dropper guy like with the rest of the family, but we walked in and they had pictures all over this one room, and I swear I've either met or just had some experience through WGNA with all of them. It was incredible. I didn't even want to say anything to people because they wouldn't believe it.
Well, how many years were you there?
29.
29 years. I mean, how many people are anywhere 29 years?
Well,
so that was an incredible feat. You should be proud of that.
Well, they stopped paying me 10 years ago, but I still kept coming in.
Just showed up, sweep floors.
That's right. I remember the first concert was Randy Travis, the first thing I ever introduced, and he walked right up to me. This is like the first star I ever met. He walked up and he goes, "Can you tell me where the bathroom is?" That was my most exciting experience, showing him where the bathroom was.
And you just nodded and pointed, right? You couldn't speak.
I couldn't even speak. Well, Mark, thank you so much. What can I say?
My pleasure. I mean, Rich, you have been an icon in this area for a long time.
Well, thank you very
much. So I'm proud to be part of your podcast. I hope you get a million listeners, and I know they won't listen to this one, but...
Sure. I'm going to steal your listeners. What do you think I have you on for?
But I know my friends should be listening to this, because you are an icon in country music in the upstate New York area.
Thank you, Mark.
Hopefully soon, with your podcast, some folks outside of the Capital District will get to hear you too.
Well, thanks. The name of my podcast is Take It to the Top, and I just did the top of the local country music scene and the financial scene.
That's right.
Mark Pierre, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
Talented man. Really enjoyed talking to Mark. That about wraps it up for this edition of Take It to the Top. I've got all kinds of guests lined up, local, national. I'm even working on a couple more country artists. And speaking of country, I have an idea to go on the road a little bit here and there and everywhere and do a country piano bar.
meaning I just bring my, you know, it's a low-tech piano bar. I just bring my electric keyboard, set it up. We put some chairs around it. We can do this anywhere. If you know of a venue that would be interested in doing a one-nighter, maybe we could do part of it for a charity at some point. I can do some parodies for charities. Shoot me an email, richie1077@gmail.com. I'd love to come out and do a little piano bar. I've got a little shtick already worked up. I've done a couple of these in the area so far, and I'd like to kind of take it to the outskirts of the Capital Region. And repeating again, if you have a guest that you'd like to hear on the podcast, let me know about that too. And I, your humble podcasting servant, will work as hard as I can to...
Take it.